please enjoy this Legends of Sport classic with Coach K.
Welcome back, everybody, to Legends of Sport, the podcast. I'm Andrew D. Bernstein here with my co-host and my good friend, producer Jonas Wadler. Jonas, how are you, pal?
I am good. You know, it's a Monday today.
It is.
And usually Mondays are not
fun
good.
Day. Yeah.
But today's good. Today's good. We're back from Vegas. A great week in Vegas.
Yeah. Barely standing. Well, it's a good thing we're sitting, actually, but it's true. In the studio. A little recap on the podcast people are about to listen to, right? Because it's weird because we do this setup before anyway listens to the podcast, which we already did. We just had a great time in Vegas. We were able to talk to a legendary coach, Mike Krzyzewski, Coach K. And the history on Coach K and myself goes back 26 summers to the summer of 1992. I first met him in San Diego. It was the opening of the Dream Team training camp. And I spent the next 7 weeks with that team, including Coach K and great Chuck Daly, PJ Carlissimo, and Lenny Wilkins with the other assistants. And I really must say that I've never really met anyone quite like Coach K. I mean, Phil Jackson, Pat Riley, these are legendary coaches, of course, Chuck Daly. But Coach K is an interesting character. He transcends coaching. He is a military guy. He's a hardworking blue collar background. I took to him right away, and what was really amazing, I just got to tell you that I took my dad with me to the Dream Team, the whole experience that we had in Monaco and Barcelona, and my dad being an ex-Army guy, he and Coach K really bonded. It was a beautiful thing, and every time I saw Coach K year after year after that, he always asked me about my dad. Mm-hmm. And, fast forward, Coach K became the head coach of USA Basketball in 2004, right?
2005.
2005, yes. After the 2004 Olympics.
Correct.
And has gone on and done amazing things with that team, and now has passed the torch to the next coach, which is Greg Popovich.
Another legend.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and we're going to hear all about his journey right here this week.
Yeah, and it was really a fascinating conversation with somebody that I thought I knew, but we found out some stuff that I didn't know, that you didn't know, and now everyone else is going to know.
So, the bigger question is, does Coach K play craps?
I can attest to the fact that he plays craps, but he's a huge Springsteen fan. So if anything else besides basketball, fatherhood, coaching, life is going to bond me with somebody, it's going to be Bruce.
Well, I'll tell you what. We got to get Coach K to the craps table because you were rolling some serious sixes and eights at the table after that interview, and you had the magic touch.
Yeah, that's a whole other podcast, but... Craps with Andy coming up. Yes, that's it.
It's the sequel podcast.
Yeah. Well, without further ado, here we go. Coach K.
We read something about you that a potential recruit has to meet the Krzyzewski family. Is that how it works?
Well, they meet, they always meet my wife.
Yeah.
Because my daughters and my grandkids around, if they're there for any type of activity, if they're there for a game or whatever, they're going to meet my family. And it's good because we feel we have a family.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
With our former players. This will be my 39th year. At Duke,
wow.
44th as a head coach.
Wow.
And so that continuity has, we have a great school, but it's produced what we call a brotherhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
for
it's
sure.
been good.
Well, we can attest to that directly. I mean, I've known you since 92.
Yeah.
But we've had a couple of your more well-known alums on the podcast, Grant Hill for one.
Yeah, great.
We just had Jay Williams on last week.
Yeah, and he's really... doing some neat things.
Oh yeah, his the new series he's working on that LeBron and his team produced called Best Shot.
By the
definitely
way, you
must see TV.
You have a text featured in Best Shot on YouTube.
I do.
Yeah,
you texted Jay.
Yeah.
About him getting into the College Basketball Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many of your former players are you in touch with?
Jeez, as many as I can be. Mm-hmm. And I try to stay involved with everyone who's still playing because at some time they make transitions, whether it be in the pros, they're getting from their rookie contract to the veteran, or they've been traded, or they've been released, or they're going to Europe, or, and this is the toughest thing for me as a coach, is when they finally give up playing. Mm. The bridge that I call it a transition bridge that I try to help them with, you know, to find out what it is. Like a Grant Hill didn't need it, but a lot of guys need it because they, this is what I've done my entire life. Oh, yes. And so
the real world is there.
You know
what?
Before the draft and after, like right now, I've been in touch with even more guys who are, I want to make sure all my guys are settled. Mm. They all have jobs. They, all that. It's kind of like, you know, they're part of your family. So I keep pretty close touch. Yeah.
And are you preparing them for life after basketball when they're in your program?
Yeah, well, you know what? I think Duke does that. Mm. Now, we had more of a chance of doing that when they're there for multiple years.
Yes.
If, you know, if they're there 1 year, what we've tried to do is start a relationship earlier before they get there.
Mm-hmm. How do you do that?
Texting, calling, frequency of contact that I wouldn't have had, like with J.J. Redick or Battier or even John Shire and those guys. But in the recent years, you try to do that early because you might lose them, and then you, in some way you try to keep them connected. So each year we have a fantasy camp. 16 years, and we had 100 guys come in, and we bring back about 35 of our former players. And so they connect. The 80s and the 90s and the 2000s become friends. They network with one another.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And then they can network with some of the people at the camp. And that's how Grant Hill met the guys that he bought the Hawks with.
Yeah, really?
That fantasy camp.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just... Yeah, I'm a big believer in trying to stay with them for as long as they want us to stay with them, and usually they want us to stay with them for a long time.
Yeah, that's an incredible fraternity.
It is.
And family, like you said. Yeah.
Does it get frustrating? I mean, I know you have to play within the system the way it is, but to see these guys, some of these guys leave after a year now. I mean, before Kyrie, you didn't have any one-and-dones. And
yeah, we had a Elton. Elton was two, Uwaldang, but it wasn't...
McGetty, I guess.
Yeah, it wasn't the norm.
Yeah.
You know, and all of a sudden, 2011, and the world changed. Mm-hmm. I think not just for us, but it just... It was almost like you guys felt like they have to go. I would rather have them, if it's advantageous, go... but not feel like they have to go, where maybe a second year might... Not, getting in the NBA is not the thing. Staying in the NBA is the thing.
And being ready for life.
Being ready.
I mean, you know, when I was 18, 19, I wasn't ready to get out in the world. No. I needed that.
There's
that
somebody,
time in
some people who say that still is the case.
Yeah. pretty much. But, it's like 90 years later. Well, you and I met in 92. You're an assistant coach for the Dream Team.
Right.
I remember it vividly when you met my dad for the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
And my dad, Army guy, you're an Army. You guys bonded immediately over the Army stuff, told great stories. Can you talk a little bit about working with Coach Daly and what that whole experience was like for you?
Well, you know, it's funny you bring that up. About 2 weeks ago, I'm in my home and turn on NBA TV, and they have a special on the Dream Team.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching, and I say, I got chills now.
Did that really happen?
Yeah, and I'm saying, there was a moment in time.
Yeah.
And I actually text the number of the guys on the team, and they got back, whether it be Patrick, David, Chris Small, and a bunch of the guys.
Yeah.
And it's hard to explain because I've coached the U.S. team for 11 years, from 05 to 16, but still not like the Dream Team. Mm-hmm. It really changed the course of worldwide basketball. Mm-hmm. And who better than those guys on that team? Mm-hmm. You know, the gentlemen, the great players, but they brought their brand. They built the NBA along with the Russells and mm-hmm. all the
yeah.
Yeah, pre, but they brought USA Basketball did not have a culture.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought their culture in, and it was exquisite.
Yeah.
And then it was on a world stage, and people, you talk about the Beatles and people like that.
Yeah.
You know, that Dream Team was followed like a rock group.
It was unbelievable. I was telling Jonas on the drive up here about how the bus was watched 24 hours a day. The guys couldn't leave the hotel.
Except for Barclay.
Barclay.
And they couldn't stay in Olympic Village, right? They had
No.
Yeah.
And people say that even now, like, you should do that. That's impossible.
Yeah, that's really impossible.
It's impossible.
But what an experience it was, Coach. I mean, I always said I could if I could have retired after that, you know, how does it get better than that?
But you know, you mentioned Chuck Daly.
Yeah.
And what a not just a great coach, but what a great man.
Mm-hmm.
And for him to manage that and also to give me and PJ opportunities mm-hmm. as college coaches along with Lenny Wilkins. Lenny deserved, I'm not sure PJ and I deserved to be on the staff.
Yeah.
And really how he blended everybody,
mm-hmm.
and especially Michael,
mm-hmm.
because if you know, if you're an NBA history buff, you know that those guys were going after each other.
Oh yeah,
Detroit, Chicago.
Yeah, right.
And he bonded with Michael, and mm-hmm. that was the key.
Mm-hmm.
And then Michael bonding with that guy named Magic Johnson, Bird kind of just watches everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are generations. There are players of eras on that team. And Chuck was able to get them all together.
There was a notorious scrimmage, the red versus blue team, right?
Yeah.
That the press wasn't allowed in.
Yeah, Magic against Michaels. Yeah.
Right. I think Clyde and Stockton were out, so those were the only two guards. Sports Illustrated called this the greatest game nobody saw.
I don't, it was,
is that,
it was
is
the
that
greatest
dramatic?
Pickup game. You know,
Michael Jordan said it was the greatest game he ever played in.
Yeah, well, he played a lot of great games.
Yeah.
But it was the ultimate of, because they didn't really, we didn't practice that hard. They, we shouldn't have. And but on that day, it ramped up a number of degrees. And I did a real smart thing. When we first got there, Chuck said, well, I need somebody to do drills. I said, I'll do the drills. And, well, someone's got a referee. PJ had to referee.
Wow.
And he got killed.
I bet he did.
He got killed.
I could imagine what that
he
must have been
killed
like.
He got killed in that scrimmage. They were, there were a lot of good, cool things said.
Yeah. Now, did that refresh my memory? Did that scrimmage happen after they had lost to the
no, you know what?
Dudes?
No, yeah, well after.
Yeah.
The thing for that real short scrimmage that they so-called lost, that was in San Diego.
Right, yeah.
And Chuck orchestrated that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, those college kids were Chris Webber and all, Leitner, now in Houston. And
some serious guys.
Some serious guys.
Yeah.
But they, not Leitner. Leitner was on our team. But the, all the good college players. And Grant Hill.
Grant Hill.
And, Chuck was so smart. We weren't, again, it was a real short period of time, and we weren't playing well. And Michael's sitting on the sideline, like, okay, put me in.
Yeah.
And he never put him in. And no, he never put him in.
Huh.
Michael didn't play in that that scrimmage.
Okay.
And I knew what he was doing. And he wanted us to lose just so they would know. I tell Hurley and Grant Hill, no, coach. I said, yes.
Really?
You guys think you could really beat those guys?
Yeah.
And then
with
the
no
next
MJ.
Day.
I didn't even know MJ.
Yeah, yeah.
That.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. You know, can I go? No. He says, just sit down.
Yeah.
It'll be all right. The next day, we scrimmaged and they didn't score.
Yeah.
You know, they just.
I was at that scrimmage.
Yeah.
And yeah, I remember it. Yeah.
It was a little bit different.
Yeah, was there any.
Yeah.
Any. Duke UNC stuff between you and Michael?
No, just the opposite. In fact, some great stories about that of inclusion, of how a great player affects his environment in a positive way. And, you know, me and PJ were the bottom guys on the totem pole, and he's probably at the top, you know, and was at the top.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't have that type of totem pole. For him, everybody was important, and he went out of his way really to interact, and we became good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it really showed his mastery, not just of the game, but the environment that he was supposed to create.
Yeah.
A great player should help create his environment,
mm-hmm.
not just allow other people to do it. Mm. And that takes stuff off the court,
yeah,
and
yeah.
huddles and,
yeah.
and all that, buses, and mm-hmm. and Michael did that.
You know, I think Kobe was a great example of that, right? In 2008, when the guys kind of watched him from the side and what his work ethic was like and his workout routine, and all of a sudden, you know, seeing them hanging around the hotel, they're in the gym, they're working
out.
Well,
one of the key things with us when we were building the program and the culture for USA Basketball is to get some older guys,
mm-hmm.
not that they're old, but Kobe, Chauncey, mm-hmm. Billups, mm-hmm. Jason Kidd, and Kobe was the key guy.
Yeah.
And when he came, he knew that LeBron and all those guys were going to watch him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are you going to buy in? Are you going to do all this? And, mm-hmm. you know, great story. We're here in Las Vegas, and the coaches are here 2 days ahead, and there's a knock on our door, and it's Kobe. He's always, you know, he's the most prepared guy.
Yeah.
And he says, Coach, can I talk to you for a second? I said, yeah. So we talk, and he said, I want you to do me a favor. And I said, what's that? And he said, I want to guard the best perimeter player on every team we play. And then he paused, and he said, Coach, I promise you I'll destroy him.
Yeah.
And it was his way. Now, he's the scoring leader in the NBA and all that. And even at our first meeting, he puts his hand up and he says, you know, if we play defense and rebound, you know, we'll be good.
Mm.
First practice, he didn't even take a shot.
Mm.
I go up to him. I said, you know, I've seen you destroy people with your offense, too. He says, Coach, you know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I want to make sure everybody knows that I'm all in.
Mm.
And he did that without me or anybody telling him.
Mm.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
And the really great ones were not just talented. They're brilliant in their own way.
Absolutely. Do you ever think about what it would have been like to coach him
at
Duke? I mean, obviously that was where he intended or thought about
going. Yeah,
who
knows? He never really intended to go to college, but he kind of made a few of us feel like we were important.
And, did he come down?
No. But we came up. I never saw LeBron play in high school,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not saying I've seen every great player play in high school, but Kobe is the best player that I ever saw in high school. When he walked in the gym, he already acted like he was 24 and owned it, you know, and then the game started and he did.
Yeah.
I don't mean to digress, fellas, but...
Yes.
The 92 Dream Team or the 2012?
Oh, no, I don't do those. You got the wrong guy for this podcast. No.
You know, I was thinking
same
about
thing.
This.
You know, people ask me, like, who's your favorite Duke player? What team?
No, we won't ask you that.
Do you get tired of the white noise on ESPN these days where there's all that?
Comparing everything.
We talked with Jay about this. And
You know, why don't we just appreciate greatness?
Sure.
And
that's fair.
You know, the thing about it is each player and team was part of its own era.
Mm-hmm.
So you can never create the same environment, you know, for the game, you know, the team.
Yeah, it's impossible.
It's impossible. Yeah. So, you know.
And the game evolves. And
yes.
Yeah, it's a whole different game.
Now, look, there's a room that's not that big.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a few people in it.
Right.
You know, I can tell you. A number of people, but I wouldn't tell you everybody because then somebody who's just outside of it is going to get mad.
Right.
But the seats are somewhat interchangeable in that room.
They
right?
are.
So,
and
very
you know,
diplomatic of
you. You know, a cool thing in 12, 12 was our, I think, our best team that I coached.
Yeah.
And because we had three players of their era on the team, You had Kobe, who is at towards the end of his career, but he's a player of his era. Mm. LeBron, and then Durant.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had these other guys who were still in their prime, like Carmelo.
Yeah.
And
that was an amazing team, Coach. Yeah, I tell you.
Chris Paul.
That was Dream Team-esque.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I think that was the...
Yeah.
You know, probably would have been a hell of a game.
Yeah, it would have been amazing.
Yeah. And what's interesting, I don't know if you remember, that's the strike-shortened season.
Yes, that's right.
The Olympics were earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So those guys were running on fumes.
Yeah, yeah. And that's true, because they jammed all those games in
quickly.
And then they just came right out of the finals, playoffs and finals. Yeah,
yeah,
that's true.
So all those guys that have committed to USA basketball, I have a tremendous respect for, because their careers aren't that long.
Yeah.
And to devote summers and risk of injury and all that, and they did it, and they did it in a very beautiful manner.
Well, let's talk about that, Coach, because the whole culture obviously changed when Jerry came in.
Yeah.
And of course, brought you in right away. And all of a sudden, you're getting these guys to buy in to being on the Olympic team, representing the country, their country. I was lucky enough. I think I'm the only civilian who was allowed in your team meetings. Which were mind-blowing to me. I would leave those meetings and just my head was swimming. I mean, you would have General Dempsey come in.
Wounded Warriors.
I mean, and the things you would do with the team and taking them to military installations and bases. You know, that culture has grown even more.
Right.
So now guys, they're not trying to get out of, being in it.
They want to do it. Yeah, you know, the one thing you have to be careful about is you don't assume culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the single biggest decision for USA basketball during that time period was Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
And giving him the autonomy. Jerry Colangelo has done an amazing job for basketball in the world, but for this country.
Mm.
And we knew there was no culture. But there couldn't be a culture when how you put together a team is, I'm going to get these 12 guys, I'm going to get a coaching staff for a few weeks, and then we're going to win. Like, that's so disrespectful. But there wasn't a mechanism set up to do it better. And so Jerry, when he chose me, and then we started working on it, but we said, what's our goal? And our goal, obviously, is to win gold medals.
Mm-hmm.
But right along with it was to win the respect of our country and the world. Mm-hmm. And so to do it in a way where people respected USA basketball and how we acted, how we played.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys did that.
Yeah.
They did it. I'm proud of them.
Yeah. One of the things that you said at every first meeting, as I remember, and hope I'm not giving out too many trade secrets, was that the whole idea of leave your ego at the door.
Yeah.
You wanted them to bring the ego in the room.
That's the only time I disagreed with Jerry. He spoke to the team the first time and he said, beautifully. I mean, he's great. But he said, it's that expression, leave your egos at the door. So I'm sitting there and I'm saying, we got to play against Gasols and Ginobili and Parker and all these guys. They're not leaving their egos at the door.
Right.
So when I got up, I said, listen, LeBron, you still be LeBron. bring your egos in, but let's put them all under one umbrella and call it the USA umbrella. And let's have a USA ego.
Mm-hmm.
And our ego for the U.S. will not be as big as it should be if you don't bring you.
Mm-hmm.
Bring you.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, everyone. It's Andy Bernstein. You may know me from my Hall of Fame career as a sports photographer. Well, just like you, we all want to take great photos of our sports, travel, or family. To take great photos, you need great camera equipment and a great store. Paul's Photo has what you need, and they have what I need. The team at Paul's Photo can help you choose the right camera and teach you how to use it. Paul's Photo. Call them at 310-375-7014 or find them 24/7 online at paulsphoto.com. Paul's Photo, your local camera store, no matter where you live.
And then a key thing, this sounds so trite, but it's so pertinent. I would tell him, I said, you know, you're not playing for the U.S. And I know the first man looking and saying, boy, maybe we shouldn't have a college coach do this. I said, you're not playing for the U.S. You are USA basketball. And it won't be where it should be unless we own it. Mm. And you don't own it by renting a beach house. You got to own the beach house. And so it sounds so simple,
mm-hmm.
but it's so important.
Yeah.
And they knew that that was right.
Mm.
God bless them.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about Jerry and what he's done to recreate, in 2005, the U.S. basketball team. But you and Jerry both grew up in Chicago.
Right.
A little different times. He's a generation before you.
Yeah.
But you both grew up working class families. Can you talk a little bit about your childhood in Chicago? And
yeah. Now, he grew up on the south side. I grew up on the better side, the north side.
Were you a Cubs fan?
Of course, right? You can never have been a Cubs fan.
You grew up with...
No, you are.
Right, you are.
You are.
It's ingrained
even
in you.
Eternity.
Stupid question.
It's,
I'm sorry.
But you both grew up with Old Man Daly.
Yeah, you know what? What we grew up, first, with an appreciation for work, the dignity of work, where everyone is important, everybody's job is important, and respecting family to make sure that you take family to your business. I mean, when Jerry was the owner of the Phoenix Suns, if you went around with him, he knew the name of everybody there.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
And I think very similar, and that's why we hit it off. And when he gave me the opportunity to coach, he knew that we came from different sides of Chicago, but from the same value systems and the work ethic, and also that we're going to be truthful.
Right.
You know, and no ego about who's doing it. Just let's get the job done.
Mm. You were both basketball players in college.
Well, he was a better basketball player.
Right. He played for UI, right?
Yeah. He was at Kansas. When Wilt, he had his locker next to Wilt as a freshman. And when Wilt said he was gone, Jerry said, I better get out of here. I better get out. So he's always...
Can't get better than Wilt.
Jerry was always a step ahead. And still is a step ahead.
So he ended up in Illinois. Right?
Yeah, and he was...
Isn't he in the Illinois...
He's in the Hall of Fame.
No, he was a great player there. I was...
Baseball, too.
Never met a shot he didn't like.
Right.
And hit a lot of them.
Right.
I was just the opposite. I was a point guard and didn't shoot Army.
What was it like playing under Coach Knight?
No, it's really good in that... No one did things with more passion and preparation than Coach Knight. And for me to go to the best leadership school in the world, West Point, and then play point guard for him, there's a double dose of your of excellence, and so I learned a lot from him. Learned a lot.
You graduated at such an interesting time, 1969.
Yeah, amazing time.
Yeah. Yes, and from West Point, I mean, that must have been really impactful. Did you have any plans on going to Vietnam?
It wasn't if you had plans, if you were placed on orders.
Yeah. Did you get drafted?
They put you on the bus.
Yeah, well, what happens when you graduate, you have 5 years of military service. And so you're a second lieutenant, and I was in the field artillery. My first assignment was at Fort Carson, Colorado, and an executive officer of a firing battery. And after about a year and a half, I was placed on orders in 71 for Vietnam. But if it's tough to remember that far back, but they were pulling out at that time, and we were. And so at the last minute, my orders were changed for Korea. Mm. And I thank God for it I admire and respect all the servicemen and women who went there, but it was not a well done. Well done. It was a little bit like how we did USA basketball for a long time, in that we were somewhat arrogant and then therefore not real smart. Like if I was a captain at that time, if I would have gone to Vietnam, I wouldn't have gone with my unit. Mm-hmm. I would have gone to a placement center and then been placed with a unit that I never trained with. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. Our military, that's why when we were with the U.S. team for those 11 years, from 5 to 16, mm-hmm. You know, the military today is brilliant. They are the best. But they had to change their culture, mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. And in some respects, we use that we use the military as an example of what we needed to do, but also to put in selfless service. Mm-hmm. And that's why we had so many of those emotional experiences, so mm-hmm. that the guys could not only see and hear, but the key word we tried to do is feel. Mm-hmm. And how could, because if you feel, then you get into their hearts, mm-hmm. and then they own it.
Yeah.
And they did. And it was our military and all those, mm-hmm. All the many, many people who helped us. And mm-hmm. these guys were good. They are good guys. Mm-hmm. And if presented that type of stuff, they responded. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were proud to represent their country.
So sure. you were getting a postgraduate degree at Indiana, and
I was getting my MBA.
Your MBA.
I got out of the service. Yeah.
Right, you were discharged in 1974.
Yeah,
right?
And I actually went to. My wife and I got married on graduation day at West Point, and we had a little girl at that time. When we went to Indiana, but I actually went to Indiana on the GI Bill, mm-hmm. and was a grad assistant. Mm-hmm. And my wife worked, and after 1 year, I got the Army job.
Yeah.
And amazing, 28. Right? And
yeah. Did that come out of nowhere? I mean, how did that happen?
Well, they
Coach
were
Knight,
not.
I guess?
I don't. He helps, obviously, in a number of ways. It was kind of like another moment in time. I've been very lucky to be in some moments that some people have not been in, and it's worked out great.
Yeah.
But Army was so bad, and. They were 7-44 the 2 years, and then they're looking for a head coach, and I knew Army better than anybody, and actually one of the things that was against me was the fact that I got out. Mm-hmm. So there are some people there that said, "Well, you got out. Now every cadet's going to think that they should get," which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But anyway, we sometimes have to overcome.
Yeah, other people's perceptions.
Yeah, but it worked out, and we had those 5 years for me at West Point. We had to do everything and build a program, and you know, we ended up playing everybody, and we're 73-59 during that time, and it helped me immensely. And then I get the head job at Duke when I'm 33.
Right, 1980. And your first couple years there weren't so successful.
So again,
people just assume a great coach like you just come in, you change the program around.
No, we were, I think, 37-48 or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And but again, it's about culture. Mm-hmm. Like we had to build a culture. Mm-hmm. And again, guys weren't going early. You had to play against Sampson for 4 years, Jordan for three.
Yeah.
But you know, and so it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was crazy, and but I had a guy that believed in me, the guy who hired me, Tom Butters, and once we got Johnny Dawkins and Mark Allery and Jay Billis and Tommy Amaker, and the guys that we could get at Duke who were not just good players, but they were really good people, and then it took off.
Yeah. But it has to be a testament to your recruiting skill, is that you can see basketball skill, right? And you can recognize it, but it's the person beyond that. Like, what kind of person am I bringing into my program that's going to represent my program and then go out into the world?
Yeah, you know, what we try to do, and we still do, a lot of people say we've changed our recruiting just to recruit one and done, and We're recruiting the same guys. We look for three things, and they're all equal. Talent. I mean, they have to be good. Okay. They have to be pretty good students because we have one of the best schools in the world. And they have to have good character. They have to be good guys. And how do they react to their parents, their teammates? They're always the best player. Do they listen to their coach? Or
this is where Mickey comes in to filter that out.
A little bit. Well, she just gives them the eye test. We do this with the eye test. Yeah. But so, you know, that guy was Grant Hill in the early 90s and Battier in the late 90s.
Yeah.
Now it's Jason Tatum. If Grant and Jason and Shane were now, they'd be one and done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so we actually recruit harder and longer now than ever because of the turnover. Like, give you an example. Yeah. Battier, you spend 2 years recruiting him. He stays 4 years. Tatum, 2 years, he stays one. You got to get another one. So for 4 years of that level of player is 8 years.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and you're personally going and seeing these guys, right?
Yeah, and you got to do it differently. You have to stay up to date. You know, you're texting all the time. You have Bitmojis and you have FaceTime and holy crap, where did all this stuff come in? I'm 71 years old. What the hell am I doing?
Yeah,
texting a 17-year-old guy, you know, and doing it a lot.
It's working.
Yeah, well, I hope.
Still working. You said you have to coach 4 years of experience now in 1 year.
Yeah.
And like guys like Bagley, you know, and you've said he probably could have just made the jump.
Whether that changes or not, I think there are a few players just like the Kobe's and LeBron's and Dwight Howard's and Garnett and all, you know.
McGrady.
There are guys that should be given that we shouldn't force them to use college.
Yeah.
You know, just like you wouldn't force an entertainer or you know, people in some other sports to the tennis, great tennis player and all that. And again, their life expectancy in their sport is not long. So if they're that good, give them an opportunity to go.
So when have you had the experience of a player coming to you and saying, I think I'm going to go? And have you said, you know, I just don't think you're ready?
When we recruit them, we said, we'll be honest with you forever. Even when you're 30 or 40, you know, like, we'll tell you the truth.
Yeah.
And so when a guy comes in, and, you know, you just know they're going, and, okay, how can we help you with this?
Yeah.
And when a guy's trying to make a decision, what we do, you know, we know everybody in the NBA through USA Basketball and being in this so long, we'll get an honest appraisal.
Yeah.
You know, like, we think this guy is going to be, like, I'll give, like, a good example would be Luke Kennard.
Okay.
Luke came to Duke thinking he's a four-year player. And his sophomore year, he's good, really good as a sophomore year. He's terrific. And we find out, look, he's going to be in the teens. So when he and his dad came in, and they were almost a punk, like, I don't know, I said, you need to go. This is the time.
Yeah.
Well, is it okay? No, it's okay.
Yeah.
And then with some kids, you would say, I think you should stay, and they still go. Or some Grayson Allen, I didn't want him to leave after his junior year. He wasn't ready with all the stuff, injuries and all the stuff.
Yeah.
And it worked out.
Yeah, he seems like he got in a good system with Utah.
Yeah, and he had a he's ready.
Yeah.
So we owe them an honest appraisal.
Yeah.
And we tell them, like, well, our program will be okay if you stay or go. We want you, when you go, to make it.
Well, it's a very parental way of handling it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's honest.
Your own kids and, you know, my kids the same way. You know, we're trying to decide what college to go to. My daughter, she didn't know whether to stay in California. You end up going to Philadelphia. I helped her make that decision, but at the end, it was her decision. And
they have to own it.
Yeah.
And, but they have to own it with the right information. And we want to make sure they realize that we're not. Our information is not skewed in a way to influence them to stay, just because we would like them to stay. Look, all these guys, I'd like for them to stay longer.
Of course.
Because I like them, and they're good. And,
and you're building something for a period of time.
Yeah, and they would get a lot.
Yeah,
they don't just get a lot from us. They get a lot from our school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've had 67 of your players, the all ACC academic team.
Yeah.
Is that one of your proudest achievements?
No, well,
I mean, I know you have.
They're all good. They're good students when they come in. Mm-hmm. So we just try to make sure that they continue to be good students. Mm-hmm. And but it's tougher now. You know, things happen quicker now.
Yeah.
And
lightning speed.
Lightning speed. Yeah. And we want to make sure that as they're doing this, they also develop depth.
Mm-hmm.
Depth as a player, depth as a person, as a student, you know, like knowledge. Yeah. And if you can still get them to be deep along with their talent, there's a chance that they're going to be better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they'll even be better after they get through playing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
You know, we've had a couple of your former players on Grant Hill, Jay Williams, and they've told us, along with many of your other players like Carlos Boozer and J.J. Redick, about pregame spectacles.
Those are exaggerated.
Well,
my body can't do all the things that they say I did.
We just got to know about the flaming arrow thing.
And
there
the
was
not,
that
there
actually
was
no happened. Flaming arrow. There was.
So can you tell us what the real story behind that was?
Yeah, I don't even remember.
Can I tell you what I recall, and then you could tell me what's real?
Yeah, but you weren't there.
It's a great story.
You're listening to Dante Jones or somebody.
What I recall Jay Williams telling
me. Jay.
Yeah. Excuse me. But what Jay told me this. He said that you guys were watching Gladiator, and in the middle of the movie, a flaming arrow comes down the aisle, hits a dartboard, and you come rolling down the aisle in, I don't know if it was an army helmet or something. And right around the top, the scene where they're trying to mobilize the troops and you're going, attack, attack.
Yeah, something. There was
something
like that.
And it was against Maryland or something.
I don't even know who the hell it was.
And you won by 35 points.
That we should have beaten without doing something screwy.
It's a great story.
Yeah, but you know what? The cool thing with all that stuff is to try to – sometimes you have to do something different. Mm-hmm. Also for them, you connect with them better. Yeah. You know, and like for me, I'm always older than my players. I keep getting older than my players. Now I'm more than 50 years older than my players. Mm-hmm. So how do I get into their world?
Mm.
You know, I have to show them that I'm working out, or I goof with them,
right.
Or I know some music. I send them something on a text. Or, and then they have to enter my world too. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, can we find our world? And that's the cool thing for me in coaching is whatever team I'm, whether it's the U.S. team or the Duke team right now, what's our world?
Mm-hmm.
What's our world? Who are those guys? Who am I right now? What's the state of our the basketball environment?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that journey each year keeps you young.
Mm-hmm.
Like, keeps you, you know, in it, you know.
Plus, and you got your grandkids, so you got to kind of be with it.
10 grandkids,
right. Yeah.
And you can communicate with them better by being, I can communicate better with my own players because of my grandkids, and I can communicate better with my grandkids because of my players.
Right. Yeah.
Because you're, if you're on a highway, you're not on the right lane, retired, going 55.
Right.
You're zigging and zagging.
Yeah.
If you can get to that damn express lane every once in a while, you're trying to do that. And and basically, you're trying to just figure it out.
Yeah.
And that's, to me, that's the interesting part, even more interesting than figure out what offense and defense you're going to do, is what environment are you trying to create, and what will these kids, what can they give you, you know, and can you allow an environment where they might be, give you more of who they are?
Mm-hmm.
Are they, is it a safer thing for them to show who they are? And And actually, we have a group right now that I'm excited about because we've already had a couple practices. We're going on a foreign tour to Canada.
Yeah.
And so we had a couple practices. I really like my guys.
And you three top 10 guys.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. And they're good, but they're good guys. They're secure. They already interact with the upperclassmen.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel when they're on the court, they don't. This group doesn't know what class they're in, what position. Like, am I the 12th guy on the team or the first guy? They all feel a sense of importance, which is what you want. You want everybody to feel important because they are, and you want everyone on your team to understand that. It's kind of like earlier in the podcast you're talking about Jordan and me in 92 in the Dream Team. That's what he did with me. He made me feel like I was important. And for him, he wanted everyone around him to feel important. And that's what we want. And that's, to me, an objective for me every team.
It seems like there's an element of marketing in great coaching. And I've heard you say this a little bit with the 92 Dream Team. You have to sell what you're coaching. And it seems like there is certainly more of that now. Do you ever think about if you weren't coaching what you would have done? I mean, you're getting your MBA.
Yeah, you know what? I would have been a teacher. And, I am a teacher.
And absolutely.
Yeah, and because, you know, that's why I'm big on teachers. You know, we should do more for teachers because the best way that a person can become better is to improve that person's mind and educate that person. And my mom only had an eighth grade education. My dad only 2 years of high school. They believed in education. They were Catholic. They put us to private Catholic schools. I mean, I don't know how the hell they did that, how they afforded it. And then when I was a really good player in high school, so I had some scholarship offers. When West Point came in, now their parents, both sets of parents came from Poland, so were immigrants. For their son to be able to go to West Point, you got to be kidding me. And they really kind of made me go to West Point. And I always call it the best decision I never made. But I trusted them.
Yeah.
And so the education part of it, I would have been a teacher, and I would have loved it. And I hope, my goal when I was 16 was to be a teacher and a high school basketball coach. And what the hell has happened? I'm still a teacher.
Yeah, right.
And I've been able to coach these incredible teams and be in these moments and had a lot of people made me look good.
Yeah.
And but I'm still the person at 16 who I'm doing what I wanted to do at 16 my whole life. My buddies in Chicago say, you never worked a day in your life. And I say, probably.
Yeah.
But because
you're doing what you love.
I'm doing what I love.
Yeah, sure.
And holy mackerel, the hell did that happen?
Well, someone that we both share a passion for has said the same thing. Bruce Springsteen he's doing his stint on Broadway, and he says that really the only job he ever had, a regular job, because it's just doing what you love. You never considered it work,
right?
But it's his passion. Well, it's his life.
He's never working, and so you get to see him. You get to see him live.
At
the highest.
Can you just tell me, because we do share this, and I love sharing Bruce stories and sending you pictures and stuff. Your first experience, what was your first time seeing Bruce?
Yeah, here in Vegas.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
And,
what year was that?
Jeez.
I don't even know.
I don't even know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's like the only time he ever played in Vegas, actually.
Yeah. And there's no time limit.
Yeah.
And that I think anyone who's ever seen him perform would say the same thing, in that no matter where he performed, he did his best. Like, he made you, he entertained you, but he made you feel that you were important.
Yeah.
Didn't big time. He's never big time the show.
No. And he just wants, he's giving. It's a giving experience.
Yes.
And, it's kind of like Michael Jordan once said that he's playing for that kid who's sitting at the top of the arena who might have only seen him play once. Yeah. And he wants that kid to leave with the experience of having seen him at his best.
It's so unique.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. Did you see the Broadway show? Have you
no,
been?
I haven't.
Oh, Coach,
did
you
guys
go.
See
gotta
that
go.
He came out for Billy Joel's 100th show at MSG?
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's pretty wild. 10th Avenue freeze out. And
he understands that he's not the only one.
Mm-hmm.
But he's one of the – he's in that room.
Yeah.
We were talking about all those basketball players.
Yeah.
He's in the room.
Yeah.
You know.
It's inspiring.
It is inspiring.
I see a parallel between the three of you in that you're all committed to excellence. I know you've said about, tournament games. Every game is – in every one of those six games is the finals. And
it's a championship game.
Yeah. You never see a bad Bruce show. I mean, everyone, right. It's every show is a championship show.
You know, it's actually a thing that we had to do with USA Basketball. Once you get out of pool play, you get to the medal round, and it's one and done.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these guys aren't accustomed to
one
and done.
They're playing a series.
They're playing a series. Yeah. So, that's something we say. Every game is a seventh game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to get that mentality, it's
right.
A lot of habits are not just physical. Mm-hmm. They're mental and how they do it. And thank goodness these guys for USA Basketball changed the right way.
Yeah.
We have a couple questions from our Legends of Sport audience, and we know you have to go. What team, Coach, do you hate preparing for most and why?
Just the most talented and best coach teams. Mm-hmm. Although I don't know if I hate it. It brings out the best in you. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I would answer with that, though, is I prepare the same way for everybody. Mm-hmm. Because the habit of excellent preparation needs to be done every day.
Yeah.
I've coached, 1,500 games, and we just had two practices, and I write out a practice plan every time. I said, in my 44th year of coaching, there are probably 100 practices.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as I'm right now, I said, I've done over 4,000 of these.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. And you still love it. See, that's the thing, Coach. That's what I love about you. You still love it. And you're looking forward to this
preparation.
Season.
I love the preparation.
Yeah. I'm the same way. I prepare for the games the same way I do. This is my 37th season.
If you lose the ability to prepare at the highest level, you should get out.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Everyone would like to still coach or do take that picture
or do
that podcast.
Yeah.
But if you don't, the work that you do before you do those things, you have to love.
Yeah. Kobe has a great quote that if you're not passionate about what you do, we don't speak the same language.
Yeah. Well, he's an alien anyway. Yeah. He's an alien.
Unbelievable.
What books about coaching or leadership would you recommend to
you know I'm not a big I like to listen more than read and I like to observe more like I if I'm watching I'm watching a game no matter what sport I'm watching how the coach reacts I like to listen to leaders speak and I'm not a big believer in that there's certain here nothing against people who've written books the seven steps to I think you might only have three or you might have 23.
Right.
You have to find out who you're leading and what you need to do. So I'm more of an expert. I learn from experience and being with people. That's why I like to speak. And since 93 or so, I've been speaking for Washington Speakers Bureau. So you get to speak and prepare for companies, and you learn from being with those people.
Well,
we should end with this because I think this sums it up. You can't be an achiever if you're constantly toasting your past. This is your quote.
Yeah. You know, my belief in that is my car in life does not have a rearview mirror.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that,
Coach.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I might park my car
and
celebrate the past.
Yeah.
But when I'm driving, and I'm usually driving, I'm not looking at what we've done. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at what we're going to do.
You're looking at 2018, 2019.
Right now.
Always moving forward.
Yeah. And And that doesn't mean we haven't had good stuff in the rearview mirror.
Right. Yeah.
But I believe in that.
Yeah.
Well, I believe in it.
Well, we wish you the best of luck.
Coach, thank you.
Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you.
No, I enjoyed it.
Appreciate it. Really fun.
Yeah, you
to
do more now than take great pictures.
Well, try it. You know,
holy mackerel.
At some point, this old back of mine's got to get off the baseline, Coach.
Yeah. I was always worried about you, guys.
Yeah. Well, I got to see James Harden later today because I got a scar he has to sign from the playoffs. He just nailed me this year. Yeah. Ended up in the ER after a playoff game. Yeah. So.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Coach, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Right, thank
care.
You.
Remember, folks, you can find us on the iHeart app and online, as well as Apple and Spotify and your favorite podcast platform. Keep following us on Instagram at Legends of Sport, our Twitter at Legends_of Sport, our website, legendsofsport.net, and our YouTube and TikTok channels, Legends of Sport. My photography can be found on Instagram and Twitter at ADB Photo Inc. Thanks, everyone, for continuing to support the Legends of Sport podcast. Remember to rate and review and tell all your friends. We'll be back next week with another great guest and episode. Until then, stay safe, stay well.